This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to the WEEI Celtics podcast powered by CLNS Radio. I am Jared Weiss, and Sam Packer, my host, is with me. How are we doing, Sam?
I'm doing fantastic. We got Jimmy James Toscano here before the Portland Trail Blazers game, and I'm excited.
Okay, so woo Jimmy, woo. CSNNE.
What up?
Co-host of the Garden Report. This guy does everything that matters in this world. So
we don't have enough time for the intro.
Let's talk about Isaiah Thomas. So Isaiah Thomas has been playing pretty freaking impressive lately. He makes the All-Star team, drops that really, really beautiful bomb of that some All-Star asked about how Boston is.
Danny Ainge
goes on the radio, says, well, you know, Brad Stevens is a big draw, Isaiah Thomas is a big draw. I mean, what has Isaiah Thomas done this year? This is a stupid question. What has Isaiah Thomas done this year to deserve that kind of reputation?
I mean, we watched all the games. We know exactly what he's done. I mean, he's taken this team to the next level. I think we're all getting ready to watch this season. I mean, we're all talking about David Lee more than we were talking about Isaiah Thomas, if you can believe that. And Isaiah, he's really come on this year. He is an all-star. I think there's this thing around the city right now where it's like, oh, well, he might be an all-star, but he's not a good enough all-star. Or he's not this. Like, they're not going to win enough games because he's too short or this or that. He was the best player available when they were looking for a player last year at the trade deadline, and that was a great trade, and I believe Suns GM Ryan McDonough even said, like, he would take that trade back if he could. So
It was a mistake.
I mean, and that's takes a lot of guts to say something like that, but it's the truth. I mean, you can't really deny it at that point. He gives his team toughness. He gives them energy. He's not just a shot chucker type scorer. He's not like a Monta Ellis type guy. I mean, he really does get the players involved. He's obviously not, you know, one of the top defenders on the team. But that's not his job, and he knows that. And Brad Stevens knows that. They know that when they have them in there, he's in there to score points. I remember yesterday at practice, somebody asked Isaiah if he would maybe change his game a little bit on Wednesday night against the Blazers to maybe try to stop Lillard and McCollum, but sacrifice a little offense. And he just looked at him and laughed. He goes, "Nah." He's like, I'm just going to play my game the way I play it. And that's what they want him to do.
When has Isaiah Thomas ever sacrificed his offense for any purpose?
Exactly. So, I mean, I think he's playing well. He's playing great for them right now. And he is good enough to draw talent. I really do believe he is. And I believe Ainge when he said that there were players asked. There were other stars. Obviously, there were stars there at the All-Star game. There were other stars asking him about Boston, picking his brain. Isaiah Thomas seems like a pretty likable guy. I mean, he's always got a smile on his face. His teammates love him. And I think players around the league are starting to really take notice about what this guy does. I think maybe he was buried in Phoenix a little bit. Obviously in Sacramento, DeMarcus Cousins was the guy, and there was a first year or two there where Thomas was really trying to prove that he belonged in the league, but he was barely even made the NBA draft. Now he's recognized as this star, and I think other players around the league are starting to take notice of that.
I think there's two key points with Isaiah. I think just making the All-Star team is a huge thing for his reputation. It's just, you're in the locker room with all the East players. You're just actually talking to people. I think he mentioned that James and Melo, and I think Russell Westbrook, sought him out and just, like, talked to him, basically welcomed him to the club of elite players. So when you're in that club, you have a little more clout. People actually want to come play with you. And I think the thing that's made him that much better this year is he's no longer just a shooter or a scorer. He's actually just a better playmaker. We've seen there's some speculation that his wrist is still bothering him, and he hasn't been shooting the most efficiently over the past couple of games, but he still's ended up with 20 points because he does an amazing job of getting the lane, and his assists have been much more impressive, and he's a much better playmaker than I thought he was going into the season.
He's been distributing the ball so much better lately. His passing ability has really shown. And, I mean, he's always been a solid passer, but he's making, and it's not just that behind-the-head pass, but he's driving.
But that was awesome.
That was pretty awesome. But he's driving and kicking in ways that he hasn't really done before. His vision, his And I think a big part of it basically is his understanding of the offense, memorizing every single segment of the offense, just playing with these guys for long enough that he's thrown a lot of passes where guys aren't even there yet, and he knows that they're there, or he never gets a look at them. And we really saw that come into play where, I forget what part of the game it was in the last game against the Jazz, and he threw a beautiful pass to nobody in the corner. There was no one there, and
you knew that
he knew what the play was, and he knew someone was supposed to be in there. But I think it might have been Crowder to roll to the top of the key. But that kind of stuff really shows why their offense has been so much better lately. Because not only are guys shooting well again after they had that really bad slump back in December, but guys like Thomas, they're so much more in sync with how the offense is working that a lot of the plays are making themselves.
Right, and I think Celtics fans, they grow so accustomed to watching Rondo play over the last however many years, you know, 5 or 6 years at the top of his game here in Boston, and those assists and those passes that he makes. Obviously, Thomas isn't a Rajon Rondo. I mean, Rondo's leading the league in assists right now. But Thomas gives you more than what Rondo can give you. I mean, what Rondo would do sometimes would you know, he'd blow up a play holding the ball long enough, or, you know, working too hard for the pass, and teams would play off him, cheat off him all the time. Isaiah Thomas, you obviously can't do that. I've definitely been impressed with his passing ability. I think that's the second most thing I've been impressed with. The first is his ability to finish in the lane. I mean, I just don't understand how he can finish those shots. I mean, when we see him going, drive to the hoop with Rudy Gobert standing there, and he somehow goes up and under him somehow, or whatever it may be. But yes, those passes that he makes, he's definitely getting players involved.
It just doesn't make sense, and I don't see how he actually practices that, because you can't really practice the presence of a 8-footer doing random jumps. But
right.
He has just an innate ability to kind of spin the ball off the backboard. Another reason he's playing well is because he kind of plays within the team system, and you can kind of tell when the Celtics are playing well when they have 6 or 7 guys in double figures. And the player who's really kind of stepped up for the Celtics and allowed them to go in this long, I'm not going to say winning streak, but prolonged winning throughout the season, is Jay Crowder. We saw a Chris Forsberg article today from ESPN.com saying that Crowder is actually 5 of 6 in shots under a minute left to put the team ahead.
This one, game-tying or game-winning, I believe.
Yeah, shots. And that's in the highest percentage of anyone in the league. That's something I did not see coming, especially from a guy who shot 29% from three last year. What has most impressed you about kind of Crowder's game, especially his development on the offensive end?
It's his toughness. I think when you think about the Boston Celtics now, you think about a team that really, like, they give it their all out there. They're tough. They're in your face. They're going to play for 48 minutes, I would say, most of the time. There's been a couple games this year where maybe they haven't. But most of the time, I think opponents come in here and they see the Celtics and they're like, ugh, like, this is, you know, these guys
are
going
to have to try tonight.
Yeah, these guys are going to be all up in my face. Crowder, I think Crowder's the best two-way player on the team, and I don't think that's even really a question. I think what he gives you on both ends, and it's the defense I'm not surprised about. When beginning of the year start, one of my predictions that we had to make was we just had to make some Celtics predictions. I predicted that he'd make one of the all-defense teams. Now, not first team, but I put his defense up there. But his defense is translating to offense now, and he's not only is he getting stops at the defensive end, but in transition, sometimes he might be the trailer, sometimes he might be the facilitator. And they're looking to him. That's the big thing now. When they traded for him last year, it was like, who's Jay Crowder? It really was just like, who is this Jay Crowder guy? You didn't think twice about it. Then it became, wow, Jay Crowder might be better than Jeff Green. Like, I want to see Jeff Green on the bench. I want to see Jay Crowder on the game, because he was actually playing hard. I remember a couple of games I watched where it didn't look like Jeff Green was really playing that hard. And they put
Jeff Green?
Yeah, Jeff Green.
Only a couple games you watched?
Well, I'm sure he was real cheery in the locker room afterwards,
right,
too.
Right. Well, I'm trying to be a little nice, I guess. But the point is, when Crowder was on the court, comparatively speaking to Jeff Green, you could see the difference. You could see Crowder really wanting to give it 110% out there. And that hasn't stopped. And now it's translating to the offensive end where they're actually looking at him late in games, and you want him taking those shots.
What I don't understand about Crowder is how he gets to the line as much as he does and his ability to attack the basket. Because he's going to catch the ball on the right elbow, and he's going to drive right. And it seems every single time, at least people who have been watching the team this whole year, we know what's happening, but defenses haven't really seemed to adjust. And he has a kind of crazy ability to draw contact that I can't really compare to anyone else, because it's not as the same as James Harden. It's not as like downhill attacking the basket, but somehow he just knows the instant moment when to throw the ball up, and it's really added to his point totals this year.
Mark D'Amico, somebody tweeted Mark D'Amico, I believe, a couple days ago, is Jay Crowder, I don't know the exact wording, but comparing Crowder to Kawhi Leonard in ways. Do you guys see that at all?
There are definitely ways in which they're similar.
Yeah.
Kawhi moves with a lot more fluidity, more body control, but that's something that Jay's made a very big improvement on this year. I think Crowder's probably just kind of lesser able, poor, I don't want to use the term poor man's because that's not really fair, but version of Leonard. Leonard just does all those things that Jay can do, but just with more fluidity, more body control. His touch is better from everywhere on the court. I mean, Kawhi can take any shot imaginable pretty much. And then defensively, I mean, Crowder can do almost everything that
I feel like Crowder can also guard bigger guys. I don't think of Kawhi Leonard as like guarding up a position, but he probably could. But
he does once in a while. But they don't need him to as much as the Celtics need Crowder to do it.
Right.
But Kawhi definitely can't. But Crowder is a lot thicker and more powerful than Kawhi is.
And that's another thing about having Crowder is Stevens likes to play small ball, and he couldn't do that half as effective if Crowder wasn't out there for those times where he does go to small ball.
And they're doing it more and more as the playoffs get closer, and they're finding. And I actually asked Jay about this after the last game, is how comfortable does he feel defending big guys at the four? Because he had to go up against, Utah had so many good big guys. Mm-hmm. Lyles had a big game. Favors was really good. And he's starting, at the beginning of the year, he was struggling with that. Good post-scoring fours would just take him off the dribble and they'd score on him because he kept finding himself in no man's land trying to rotate in the pivot, stuff like that. But he's kind of learned how to do that better this year, and he's learned how to put his body on guys much better. And as the year's gone on, he's gotten a lot more effective defensively, playing more in the low post.
Where would Crowder rank for you? I mean, I know you can't list him off the top of your head, but most improved player? I mean, I think he's going to be in the conversation.
He's got to be in the top three or four.
I mean, I think the most improved player could be somebody who's playing against the Celtics tonight, CJ McCollum.
He might actually win the award, but I think the most improved player might be Steph Curry.
Yeah,
like, I'm not giving you that.
He's not going to win it, you're never going to give that to the reigning MVP, but to see his numbers after winning MVP season, it's absolutely absurd. I actually ran into Mike Zarin at a BC game the other day, and I asked him the same question about Jay Crowder, most improved, and he said Steph Curry, and I had never thought about it until then. I was like, all right, Mike Zarin.
Steph Curry's going to he's going to win the MVP.
Oh, he's not going to win the award, but in terms of, like,
right,
percentage of game improved, you might say Steph Curry.
That's like saying, I mean, Steph Curry is obviously having an amazing season, but he had a pretty darn good season last year. I think percentage-wise, he's that much better still?
I don't know. Once I said that, I kind of regret letting it slip.
Well, I think Curry would definitely deserve it if it weren't for McCullough, the way that he's gone from being like an okay bench player to a near all-star this year.
Yeah.
I think that if you want to look at the percentage change, it's like McCullough is like 70% better.
He's having 20
points
a game.
While Curry's like 60% better. But you cannot really, there's no possible way to really to describe in words how much better Curry is than last year. And he was incredible last year. But this year, last year was just like, wow, he's phenomenal. He's really taking over the game. To this year, he's playing at a level that we see. Like, we saw MJ play for 1 year. We saw Kobe do it for a year. We saw Bird do it for a year. He's at the point where it's like he's just throwing up jokes, and they're going in. That half, like that 40-footer against the Thunder, that shot was absurd, and he did it so casually. I mean, stuff like that that's stuff of dreams.
He's playing so awesome that people are starting to wonder if they should move the three-point line back now.
So should they?
No, of course not. I don't think so. You gotta keep the game the way it is. I don't think anyone's complaining about where the three-point line is.
So the argument I heard about it is not about players like Steph or players who can actually make the deeper threes. It's more players like Kevin Love and Jared Solinger who have a mid-range game and are actually very skilled on the block, but because of the way the value of the three now, they're forced to step out, and they're making it just – it's too easy to make a three. Players are too good, so basically – the point of moving that out would basically to return the power forward, so there's actually more low post play. And so the elite three-point shooters, it really wouldn't affect them, but it would basically return basketball to more of a inside-outside game.
And that's interesting. I don't know if we're there yet.
You know, the thing is, though, on average, players' vertical leap has gotten a few inches higher now, but there's not
raise really, the rim!
It's the end. No one's ever really as said.
I actually really want them to lower the rim in the WNBA. Because I only see some ladies dunk.
I mean, a lot more women are dunking the WNBA now. It used to be pretty rare, but so many 6'5 women have become much better basketball players. That the same thing with the NBA. it's like now there's way more 6'10 guys that are really good ball handlers. Mm-hmm. And that the Paul George, Kevin Durant prototype is now like a normal thing pretty much. And now there's so many 6'10 and 7-footers that can shoot the ball better from the outside. It's the game goes revolutions. I don't believe in moving the 3-point line. I think if they got if it got to the point that everybody if like the league leader was shooting like 65% from the 3-point line, then maybe I would think him. But
right.
there's still a pretty good degree of difficulty with the 3-ball.
Yeah, and then I mean I this would never happen, but some people are throwing out like 4-point plays and you know all this junk, and it's just what is this NBA Jam, like just keep the game.
How about if you score 3 baskets in a row, you're able to jump 45 feet and your shoes catch fire?
I'm all for that. I'm all for more players being on fire. I think that's adds for the game.
More heat checks?
Yeah. All right, we're going to get out of here. We have to go. Brad is about to talk. We'll get on this. The Celtics are 36-25 right now.
Okay, yeah.
21 games left. Can they win 50? They have to go 14-7. They have a pretty tough schedule, though. They play the Trailblazers twice, the Raptors twice. They still got games against the Cavs, the Thunder, the Warriors, and some tough middle teams in there like the Heat
Clippers.
And the Hawks. Clippers as well. Can they go 14-7
I'm saying no. I'm saying no, they can't. I don't think they can. That's tough. That's a tough schedule. I looked at the schedule and all those teams you just named, plus some other like still tough ones. Like you still got the Pacers. You still got, you know, the Magic will give you a tough time. They already beat the Celtics, you know, in the middle of their awful losing skid. It's not easy to go 14-7. I mean, any you know, that's 660%, whatever the heck it is. That's not to say they're having a bad season. I mean, I don't think if they get 50 wins, I don't think that's like, oh wow, what a you know bummer that is. I think they'll end up with about, you know, if they end up with 46 wins, something like that.
I mean, 46 is kind of low. That's a low ball guess.
46, there. 47.
Yeah, but I think they could do it.
Maybe 48.
I mean, if they 14-7 is basically they lose all the games to teams that are like better than them on the stretch run,
and then they win and all they, the games.
And then,
that
they aren't. And then I think they would have to drop one or two from like a team that's
but they have
evenly
this year.
Matched.
They've dropped some bad games this
yeah,
year.
Yeah, that's true. But they also, I mean, they stole that win in Cleveland. That was like the crazy one.
It's right. almost as if they happened. Have to play the games, and you can't just look at the schedule and go win loss like you were
right.
Mike and the Mag Dog.
Well,
I can guarantee you nobody in the Celtics locker room is looking ahead at the schedule saying, oh, can we win 50?
Well, they all think they're going to go 21-0, so what does it matter? We'll have to ask them. I'm sure we'll get some
answers. I'll ask ET right
I'm
now.
Saying, I'm saying just slightly under 50.
All right, that'll do it. Sam, thank you. Jimmy, beautiful. Just perfect podcasting.
Yeah.
Well done.
I really like your socks, too.
I figured yeah. that. Oh, yeah.
You can't see him, but he's wearing – I actually have those exact same ones. Happy socks, right?
Wore my podcast socks today.
Those are classy. Yeah. All right, we're going to get out of here.
My socks don't even match.
So subscribe to us on iTunes while they talk about socks. Subscribe on Stitcher. Go to WEI.com and CLNSradio.com to listen to the show as well. Subscribe in real life. We'll come sit on your living room couch, and we'll banter about random Celtics crap.
Not even that. I'll just ask you how your day's doing.
I'll probably ask for, like, a snack.
Well, everybody have a nice day. Grab a sack. Grab a sack too.
Charles.
All right, let's get out of here.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.